What an Album, Episode 1. Welcome to What an Album. This is our first podcast. We're here today, Julia and I, husband and wife, and we're going to talk about albums.
Welcome.
We're going to talk about albums that are meaningful to us, that are meaningful in general, and hopefully connect with you guys out there and see what we have in common. So the idea to do this came because, you know, both Julia and I really love music,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that brought us together as a couple, mm-hmm. and we can tell the story one day. It's really something that we were always sitting listening to music and we'd say, wow, what an album. This is incredible. So the idea here is to get complete albums that were recorded, you know, in one sitting, but it was an album that was released as an album. So even though there might be great songs that are independent that come in separate albums, we try to look at an album as a whole.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And then to relate it to our experiences, mm-hmm. and just, I think, general culture and things like that, and see what we bring out of it. And hopefully, you know, we will connect with everyone as a part of it.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. And yeah, guys, music is very important for us. It's a way for us to connect, Carlos and I. I wanted to give you a little bit of our background. I'm Brazilian, and my English is not perfect, so I'll have some, you know, there are some words that I might not know, I'll have a little bit of an accent, but hopefully this won't be a problem.
Nah, never a problem, especially because I'm Brazilian too. So we'll get to the right spots.
But you don't have the accent.
No, I've worked hard at not having it at some point. But we're gonna do a lot of the of albums, mostly rock, because that's the kind of thing that we like. But our tastes are fairly eclectic. We're gonna discuss at some point. We might even do some Brazilian music, maybe some bossa nova or something like that, because we both love it. And
we can't wait to have some guests over too.
Yes, eventually.
We have great friends who love music, and we think it would be awesome to talk a little bit about the things that we love and
Absolutely.
Music.
And so a little bit more about Julia and I. We're married. We've been married for 15 years, we have 3 kids mm-hmm. and a dog. So you know, typical family, I guess, in many ways. And we live in Florida. Our taste for music, I think, and our appreciation for music, I think, is one of the things that really we see as setting us apart. Because even though we have a bunch of friends that really love music, I'm not trying to brag or anything. We, you know, one of the things that brought us together. So today, episode 1 is an album that we always talked about. Now, we gotta, you know, this, what an album, is one of the things we always said. It's Pearl Jam 10, right?
Yay!
The album 10 by Pearl Jam.
My first CD.
So the album 10 by Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam is the American rock band from Seattle, grunge. It was released in August 27th, 1991. The members of Pearl Jam, of course, Eddie Vedder is the main vocalist, and I think the most recognizable person. But you also have Jeff Hartman is the bassist. Stone Gossard is the guitarist. You got Mike McCready as a guitarist, and the drummer is Dave Crewson. And they got together and formed Pearl Jam in 1990. It came after a previous band called Mother Love Bone, which unfortunately the guitarist Jeff Hartman and Steve Gossard were forced to break up because in part the singer committed suicide.
Oh,
it was an unfortunate event.
Yeah.
But you can also listen if you want some pre-Eddie Vedder, Pearl Jam, Mother Love Bone has a great CD. I think it's called Apple.
And guys, let me just pause for a second. It was released in 1991. Let me say that again. 1991.
It'll be 30 years. Yeah, you make us feel
old. It seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Makes us feel old.
Because there is this grunge girl still inside of me, you know. And
she dresses in plaid every now and then. So.
She hasn't died, and I mean, that's why we're here.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea is we're going to go song by song, and we'll talk a little about each song. We'll play just a snippet of the song so that you guys can listen on your own and just remember which song is which. But we'll talk about each song and how we relate to it and when we think about each song. And some songs might be, you know, our conversation will be a lot longer than others because of our experiences with each song.
Yeah.
And in the end, we'll wrap things up and we'll talk about the album as a whole. And so without
further ado,
let's start with the first song of the album 10, which is...
Once,
okay. Okay, that was a kick in the proverbial nuts.
We don't know if you guys listened to it, but we did the whole thing. And yeah, it's just incredible. I don't know if you guys are like us, MTV people. Actually, what's
MTV generation to something? Yeah. Well, at that point, it was something bigger.
All the, you know, the video clips, you know, they were a lot, you know, they were... We had video clips of Alive, Even Flow, but Once was not in the radar. Once was not, you know, one of the songs that were
it wasn't most released successful. As a single. It wasn't released as a single.
And I think, exactly, thank you. And my two cents here is, guys, when I first listened to, you know, first put on my CD on my CD player and I played the song, the album, this song, come on, is amazing. It's just a great song to start an album with.
Yeah, it was a B-side for the Alive single, mm-hmm. So it was there. But it's a great song. It's very intense. The very beginning has a little bit of an intro that's repeated at the end of the album with Release, mm-hmm. at a much longer. But it's really intense, and I think it brings an intensity to the album. Of course, at this point, we're being introduced to the voice of Eddie Vedder, and if you just see, you know, the repercussion and all the different bands that came in the 90s, that just everybody just trying to be Eddie Vedder out there and just try to have his voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to pretend I'm Eddie Vedder sometimes because his voice is so cool. But this was an introduction to it, and what an introduction, right? I mean, the song is about, you know, supposedly a serial killer, but that's not really the point here. I mean, it's also part of like a trilogy. Yeah. I mean, it's the middle chapter of a trilogy.
Is it really about a psycho killer?
Yeah, no, serial killer.
Serial killer?
Yeah.
What?
So basically, the song is a three-part song. That Alive is the first part. This would be where there's a mother-son kind of thing there that's semi-autobiographical by Eddie Vedder. And then Once is the middle chapter, which is essentially this. He goes on a murder spree, so to speak. And then the third is a song that wasn't released with 10 called Footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a B-side to one of the singles, but it wasn't released.
Mm-hmm.
The serial killer is in jail and about to be put in an electric chair or something. Mm-hmm. So this, again, very intense song.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's you know, it showcases what Pearl Jam is all about right off the bat.
I agree. It's so funny you should say it's about a serial killer. It's how funny, because it has, I mean, problem is I have not heard, you know, all the songs really meaning to understand the lyrics all the time. Some of them, not all. And I think that goes for every one of their songs in this album and for great albums. You know, it turns into something else, completely different.
What they meant is only part of the total equation.
Because for me, once is about is there's a, it's about being a rebel, you know, it's about dealing with the past and the future and the present. But it was not what he originally meant, meant.
Yeah, and Eddie Vedder wrote the lyrics, but again, I don't think music is, to me, is not like that. It's not about what they necessarily meant. It's about how you relate to what's there, right? Mm-hmm. And if you extract a different meaning from not only the lyrics, but the song as a whole. And again, you can't just look at one thing, right? Because it's not as if the lyrics were the song. The song is everything together.
Yeah.
It's the intensity, it's the guitar, it's the drums, it's, you know, it's the bass, it's the, how the melody plays out. That's what it's all about. And here, again, I think if you're gonna open an album, and obviously they had, they didn't have just 12 songs or so to look at when they put together 10. They had a bunch of songs and they decided on these because they were the best, and they decided to open with this specific song because I think they wanted to show their intensity, and here you go. It's perfect in that sense. And again, it's one of the things that when you have an album of that is this memorable, you have to have an opening song that's kick ass, right?
Yeah.
You can't have an opening song that is just blending in. You have to really have a song that really grabs your attention.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. Mm-hmm. So the next song that we're gonna see is the song Alive. Oh, Even Flow. Sorry, Alive is the third one. Even Flow. So I'm gonna play a snippet for you right now. We're gonna listen to it. And it didn't stop at the first one. This is Even Flow is an amazing song.
It is. It is weird. It is just, you can't help but sing together.
Yeah. And we're going to be
though,
more.
Even though you don't know what you're singing.
Yeah, many
it's
times.
It's like.
Yeah. The funny thing, and Julia knows this, because always when I hear this song, I remember a sketch in Saturday Night Live. And I'm not talking about Opperman, because Opperman was great, and Opperman did this kind of thing, you know, Adam Sandler with Opperman, but there was a sketch where I think the musical guest was Aerosmith, and they were doing a song for basically Dream Woman, you know, Dream Woman, what's that name of the song? Either way, it was about Michael Jordan and asking him to play one more year. Play Jordan, play
one more year.
Play again. Play against Isaiah, play against Lambeer, right? It was Dream On, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would cut, like it was like We Are the World kind of thing, and there would be a bunch of musicians, and Adam Sandler was playing the role of Eddie Vedder, and he would just sing this song, and he'd be like, okay, yeah. And I thought it was so funny. But this song, again, is a great song. It's, again, about madness in some ways,
yeah.
About going into... a homeless person that is partially insane,
mm-hmm.
and about life as a homeless person. I think he was inspired, Eddie, by somebody that he saw when he was in Seattle by the needle out in Seattle, and he saw some homeless person. But again, a great song, very intense, and to me it shows...
And a super hit.
Oh yeah, yeah, huge hit. I mean, I think, you know, just to check, but this was the top, you know... in the U.S., it got to number 3 in mainstream rock, so it was a big hit.
And what an accomplishment, right?
For album.
Wow,
yeah.
First album, grunge band.
Yeah, not your mainstream kind of band.
Yeah.
But to me, what this shows, it begins to show, is just the range that, you know, if the intensity of the music is incredible, but the range that Eddie Vedder has vocally. Because if you try to sing along, it's not an easy song to sing along, because he jumps around in different octaves. It's not easy.
I would even say that the rhythm that he sings is kind of like rap, but it's not.
Yeah.
Which is not his thing, right? It must be, you know,
at that time, at that time there were a lot of rock songs that, you know, that tried to put like a rapping kind of part in between.
Yeah.
And
I can think of Aerosmith.
Well, Aerosmith was way before that.
This way.
Yeah, but Brush, right?
Yeah,
Roll the Bones.
I'm a gigantic
Rush fan, so I'll bring that up every now and then.
I would call myself a big Rush fan.
Right.
How would you?
You're a big Rush fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can get
into
that.
Not gigantic.
No. We can get into that when we do Rush. But
mm-hmm.
here we're doing Pearl Jam,
mm-hmm.
and again, a fantastic album. And I think there's a fantastic song within the album. And again, doesn't let down from the beginning. And it kind of leads on to another song that will be an amazing song.
It gets you hooked. Like,
it does.
It's one of the problems, actually, that I think... This, I digress a little bit for Pearl Jam, for us, because Pearl Jam started with such a great album. And then the second one, the third one, for us, it wasn't that spectacular, right?
No, I think for us, this was the peak. I mean, there were great songs in those albums, but this album was the peak, and I wanted to talk about, we can talk about
that
later.
Yeah, we can do that. And I just wanted to say that because, you know, our public may think otherwise, but,
yeah.
You know, this is our podcast, this is how we think, and we encourage you guys, you know,
to comment and interact with us,
please.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's one curiosity about this song, and you can, you know, this is easy to find, but they recorded the song 50 to 70 times.
Wow.
Because they just couldn't get what they thought it would. I mean, to me, it's amazing,
mm-hmm.
right? I think they got it, but apparently to this day, they're not even very happy with the way that it came out. So
it wasn't an even flow.
No, it didn't flow evenly. All right, so now let's go to the next song. This is Alive. Okay, this was actually the debut single of the album. It came out in July, about 2 months before the album actually came out. And it didn't do as well as Even Flow in terms of the you know, the charts.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's you know, I just think this is an amazing song, right? I mean, the lyrics of the song are partially autobiographical for Eddie,
mm-hmm.
For Eddie Vedder, because he did find out that his stepfather wasn't his real father at
yeah.
some point, and this song is about that.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's not autobiographical, I think, because
I hope not.
Because the second part of the song is about how the mother actually tries to have some sort of relations with the son. So again, I don't think that part's autobiographical, but it's an amazing song.
Did you watch that movie Alive? It became a soundtrack for the movie Alive, which is the plane crash.
Oh, in the Andes. Yeah, I did
yeah,
watch.
Yeah,
I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I remembered that, and I mean, Alive is an anthem.
It is.
It's just incredible how perfect the song is and how it became an anthem for people
yeah.
who are alive. And it's so great that it just goes beyond the individual experience that Eddie had.
Yeah.
And it becomes you know, just this public experience
yeah.
that everybody shares together.
And I think
in different ways, of
and
course.
I think that's one of the things that this song, you know, it's one of those songs where what he meant when he wrote it, which we just spoke about, doesn't really mean anything, because each one will interpret the song. And I think the part that sticks is "I'm Still Alive," right? Which
yeah.
everything else
let's,
just
let's face
it,
it's really hard to see someone who's been through all that and like, oh my God, I see myself completely in this song exactly as it was written.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's mostly the meaning behind it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and I'm saying that many times.
And the intensity.
Yeah, and if you don't, you know, if you don't sit in front of a computer, and at that point, if you don't, you know, grab the back cover of the CD when you wouldn't know the lyrics, you have to listen to them. You know, and I was telling Julia that I thought that part that says "I'm glad we talked" was "I'm still playing the guitar," so it doesn't really mean anything. But you know, the song and the intensity.
Adam
and
Sandler again.
Yeah, the part that says. you know, I'm still alive. I think that comes through to everyone, and that the intensity there and the anthem, as you said, it becomes just a universal kind of meaning.
Yeah.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very powerful, and one of the better songs of the album, and one of the ones that is memorable.
One of the better songs, but that's hard because there's so many great songs in this album. That's why it's an Watson album.
Exactly. I mean, all of them are good. Alive, as I said, to me, it's one of the better, but again, not the best. I have others
mm-hmm,
that I think are better.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to the next one. This is called Why Go. It's an interesting song. It's a song about, I mean, the lyrics are about insanity and or presumed insanity and about a woman that's locked up.
Put in jail. Not in jail, it's in an
asylum or something.
Asylum.
It's a more somber, I mean, I think it's a recurring theme in the album, right? I mean, we're
right.
seeing this come back
insanity.
And back again. Insanity and impotence to some degree. Again, I you know,
which probably means that this album is also a way for him to exercise all these feelings, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the things it's interesting because obviously when they wrote this, particularly the lyrics, and I don't mean just to focus on the lyrics here, but when the lyrics were written, Eddie was just a young man, right? And he wasn't a father. I don't think he was married. He was a young man. And I think, I wonder, he appears to be a wonderful father today, right? I mean, there are clips of him on YouTube, watching music with his daughters
right.
and things like that. And I wonder how he would revisit this.
Yeah.
In the skin of a father and a parent.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. But at the same time, I think that this song, this album, this generation, this, Pearl Jam was a band that started, for example, for me, I was 12 years old or so, or
a
11.
A rocker at 12.
And
yeah.
Around this age, you know, it's very common that you will feel like your parents are not, you know, perfect. And then you may or may not, you know, put some blame onto them. And so that's one of the reasons that I guess that this song, it appeals to me, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to appeal to me a lot more. Not so much these days, but not as much these days, but I think it will always appeal to a younger generation, to our younger crowd,
yeah.
you know, that's going through all these changes in their lives.
Yeah, of course. And I think that's the thing, and that's the beauty of it, because when we heard the song for the first time, we were the child, and now we are the
parents,
right? And it's a different perspective, and that's what's so great about going back and, you know, not going back because we listen to these songs frequently, but just trying to listen and think about them, because it really, the perspective where you're sitting changes the way you interpret them and might change the meaning of the song to you. I think it makes it more powerful and deeper. Not the fact that it changed them, not the meaning, but the fact that it can change is just awesome. So this is the fourth kind of heavy hitting song in a row.
Mm-hmm. And it slowly transitions into the next song.
Yes, there's almost as if the two songs blend together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the next song
is
my personal favorite.
Too.
My personal favorite of this album. This song is Black. Okay, and Judah's literally crying here. it's a very powerful song. It's one of the songs that they felt so deeply about that they did not want this released as a single. And even though they did not release it as a single, this reached number 3 in the charts in the U.S. in mainstream rock. So, again, an amazing song. There's so much about this that is great. I mean, the theme of the song is actually, you know, lost love,
mm-hmm.
right? To some degree, I kind of see loss of, almost if the woman that he lost is asking to come back is almost as if it was a muse, right? Like his muse in some
and
way.
And also then when he mentions the canvas.
Yeah, exactly. Almost as like an artist that lost his muse. And it's an interesting theme, just to, you know,
I might be wrong. I didn't research that again, but I think his girlfriend at the time that became his wife was a painter or something, an artist. And so it's pretty much autobiographical, I think, right?
It might be. I mean, he does say that it's based on a couple of other songs, the lyrics that he heard. But again, it's amazing. I think, you know, more of a ballad than the hard rock. And it kind of shows the range of the album and the range that they have. I love the little riffs at the end. You know, it's kind of, you know, that matches the vocal. It's just so, it wraps up together so well. And again, the band coming together and all the instruments coming together well, and then Eddie just capping it out with this amazing vocal talent. It's just an amazing song. And again, we're five songs into this, and it just goes to show it. These guys are, you know, this album is just comes getting you hit after hit, right?
I can tell you that every time I hear this song on the radio, I can't like skip.
You can't.
I can't change it. I have to, you know, listen to it because it's just so powerful. It's just so meaningful. And again, back to the things that we were talking about, like being a teenager, you know, your first breakup, you know, and it will go to every and each, you know, each and every
single one.
It'll resonate.
I mean, I used to think about, you know, if he comes up in the radio, people that drive by me and this song is playing will think I'm insane because I'll be singing it at my top lung capacity. it's a great song to sing, too.
It's an album that has a lot to do with insanity.
Yeah, there you go.
You're spot on.
But so this song is one of the things that I think brings me back to this album. And every time I think of 10, I think of you know, Black is a song that comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely my favorite song in the album. It's one of the, to me, it's probably, it might be the best song that Pearl Jam has, in from my opinion, has done. But it kind of wraps everything up, and it's just that powerful. And again, they're great with the hard hitting songs, and
also great
with the ballads.
With the ballads, yeah. It's just, you know, it shows goes to show what a beautiful what an album this is,
talent these guys had. And I always think that first albums of bands are really telling, right? Yeah. Because, you know, many bands, they accumulate a lot of songs and they come out and they select the best songs to put in an album.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did here. And you know, it goes to show just all that was pent up there and all that came out. So again, terrific.
Yeah.
All right. Next song up is one of the most famous ones, Jeremy. So this song is actually also partially true. The lyrics were based on, at least the lyrics were based on this kid that shot himself in front of his classroom in Texas, maybe I think 1990. But also partially fiction, or at least a fictionalized version of Eddie's life, because he was talking about a kid in his school in San Diego that he picked on to some degree. And so he blended both things, and what came out was, you know, one of the better songs of the, well, one of the better songs we're pulling.
Well, there's so many, yeah. You're going to say that to all of them.
Exactly.
Or almost all.
But this song actually, very well known again, number
it's
6.
A punch in your stomach.
At number 5, it made it to the
right?
charts. And it's a punch in the stomach. The theme is again partially insanity, partially having to do with parents, right?
Yeah.
Not really paying attention to their kids. And it's another one that I wonder, as a parent, how I would think about this, right? Because as a parent,
well,
you know that
you can say that for yourself.
I can
now,
exactly. I mean, as a parent,
you're a parent now.
Exactly. It's not that easy. It's not. It's, I mean, obviously, when you're
yeah, it's, you know, not black and white,
it's
right?
It's not, you know, exactly. I mean, It's one of those things where you would like
so
it to be.
There are so many components to the reason why a kid would shoot himself that it's not only the parents that, you know, are
responsible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the whole, you know, the whole Netflix series, I think it was
Ten Reasons Why.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about, you know, teenagers.
I haven't seen
killing,
that one,
no.
Right?
But I don't want to watch it. But
I don't think I want either.
But it's that whole thing. At that age, you're especially susceptible. So much of the world is changing.
Yeah.
That, you know, obviously, if you have strong parental support, it might help you weather through it better than if you don't. But strong parental support alone isn't necessarily the only thing that will keep you from going in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, there's the whole environment, and the environment goes beyond what's
happening. Yeah, and the song does not blame the parents only. It blames the teacher or the school, right? The school system and the kids. The video clip blames the kids.
Just
about a bunch of blaming.
Yeah.
and I think to some degree it's right, but it's correct in blaming, but.
I mean, it just...
Not only, right?
But again, if you just look at from the song itself, the riff in the beginning, you know, dun, 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 it's so iconic at this point, right?
Yeah.
It's such a powerful kind of opening to a song, and so simple.
How well produced this album was,
well,
right?
Well, they you know, Pearl Jam actually remastered the album in 2009 because they thought it was overproduced. It was too much reverb. They wanted a little bit cleaner. They wanted the voice, the vocals to be a little bit more, you know, less overproduced.
More noisy?
No, less clouded by the other instruments. We're listening to the original recordings, the one that, you know,
we
grew up liking.
Yeah, years ago.
And so in that sense, it's something that we listen to the other one. It's okay. It doesn't seem... for whatever reason, legitimate.
Yeah.
But this song specifically, again, it's one of the songs in the album that is...
But I think it was well produced. Sorry to interrupt. They might think it was overproduced. I think the fact that, you know, all these little details that you just mentioned, they're so important for this song. And, you know, just the song itself is great, but without all these little additions, I don't think it would be as great. Because it's so, you know, you pick it so easily. It's so I'm missing the word.
It
sticks to your brain,
yeah.
Right? It sticks to your almost like a jingle.
Yeah, dun, exactly. Dun, dun, dun. And in the end,
and then whoo, whoo, whoo,
and the end. It's exactly, and it's one of those things. It's probably a lot of the songs in this album have this sort of thing where it just fades out, right? With them just, you know, the, you know, heavy guitar and just singing like some sort of like lyrics, like, you know, like in black and like in this one. So,
and now I'm thinking about the next album that they made, and Verses, right?
Yes.
It's so different, right? Because this first one is more for head banging people, right? And I can think of other songs in the Max one that are like more, you know, just more rocky or more, you know, more fluid. This one is made for, how do you call it, that dance that they used to make in the 90s?
No, it's not a dance. It's a...
Like a fight or
sort? It's a mosh pit.
Yeah.
Moshing. It is, and if you look at the performances from back then, it was a mosh pit. The next album was Versus. Another thing, this song was released as a single, and basically it didn't get to the top of the charts. It said number 5, but a great song. And rolling on to the next song now, which is the album starts winding down a little bit now.
It's almost like it's going from some sort of
peak, and it started like the denouement, as we call it in the story. It just starts winding down.
Mm-hmm.
And so this song is another slow ballady song. It's called Oceans.
Hold on to the thread. The currents will shift. Like me towards you. No, something's left.
Okay, that was Oceans. This is a song, I mean, it's a slower song for sure. It's a song apparently about surfing. I mean, if you look at the lyrics,
which we know a lot about, right?
Yeah, right. I know everything about surfing. Even though we both grew up in Rio, and surfing wasn't part of our gig.
But I still would love to learn. Well, it's still on my bucket list.
There you go.
Is it on yours?
I don't know, but it could be. Why not?
Yeah, it sounds really fun. There's no single surfer I've known that isn't a cool guy, that is like
That's
at
true.
Least peaceful, you know. There's
That's
some
true.
Zen thing about it, I think.
Well, you have to be kind of in touch with nature, right? And I mean, I love the ocean.
And I think that's what the song is about,
yeah.
right? The being in touch with nature and,
yeah, and
letting
the
go.
Ocean. And the story is a funny one about how he wrote the lyrics for this song, right? They were playing the song. He went out to put change in the parking meter while they were recording the song, the music. And then he was stuck outside and he was banging on the door, but nobody would listen because everybody was inside the studio. And so while he could hear the music being played, Eddie just wrote the lyrics right there and then as they were playing the song inside. And he would pound in the door trying to get in. So the song's written in the rain. it's a good song. I like it. It reminds me personally. I had a roommate in college. Well, it wasn't actually my roommate, one of my best buddies in college that liked Pearl Jam. And he particularly, I think, liked this song. Or if he didn't like this song in particular, I remember this song playing frequently. And that's where I remember this song from. So it takes me back, almost more than 25 years now to listening to this song then.
It takes me back to sitting on the couch of my grandma's house and watching MTV pretty much all day after I came from school. And that song in particular made me so peaceful. Made me feel like so happy. It makes me happy. Even though it's not a happy song.
No, it isn't.
It's just, but it's so, it is uplifting in a way.
It is.
A very strange way.
It is. It's a different kind of song. I mean, the tuning is and the guitar is different.
And to be honest with you, I don't hear songs like this anymore. I mean, maybe it's out of my radar.
Yeah.
But
It's
just so the simplicity of it.
Yes.
Just like
yes.
The it's just so, again, natural. It's just so simple and raw. It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful song, and it's again a slower song, but it shows range because it's not for the whole band. It's just amazing. It's not something you would expect necessarily from a grunge band from Seattle.
Yeah,
right?
That shows that they're very bold and they are not afraid of showing all their colors, right?
Exactly. And I mean, if you were to listen to Nirvana, Nirvana has a ton of great songs, but you never hear a song like this from Nirvana.
You guys, you will get some Nirvana.
No,
here.
We're
going to
get
bet.
There. We'll
you
get
bet.
There.
Yeah.
But you would. I don't think you'd ever get a song like this from Nirvana. It's just a different kind of... and that's one of the reasons why I don't even know if Pearl Jam, this album, would even be qualified as grunge in that sense.
On the top of my head right now, what I can recall of a Nirvana song that would... Palely, resemble this is something in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But still.
But not the depth, I think.
Yeah.
This is just...
It's a beautiful song,
It's a beautiful
though.
Song. It is, but this is, I think, more depth. I don't know. Well, now a song that's also really great. This is Porch. Okay, that's another one that's very intense. This is a song that, you know, when I first listened to this album all the way back there, then didn't really appeal to me that much. And yet, it has appealed to me more and more. And I think part of it is because, you know, I'd taken up playing the guitar a few years back, midlife crisis of sorts, play the guitar. And I thoroughly enjoy it. I don't play.
He plays really well.
No, not really. I play well enough to keep myself entertained. And this is a song that you can play on the guitar, and it's a fun song to play. And I think the end of this song is one that if you don't get off your seat at the end of the song, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, agreed. It's so, so
and
good.
And I love it. I just always loved when he says, hear my name, take a good look. I just feel it's so, so powerful. It's, this guy, I have to tell you guys, Eddie Vedder was one of my
teenage crushes
big time. And Carlos knows that.
Yeah.
He's not afraid of it. Especially because, you know, nowadays Eddie Vedder isn't that great looking anymore, but he's a great guy. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
But he was like, oh my God, what a crush. What an amazing guy. How good looking. And, you know, and then he says all these things. How can you not love him?
Yeah, and this song, as I said, very powerful. I think, you know, they have that middle section there which slows it down and gives you some time to breathe just before they get into the end, and like at the end is like, yeah, you know, they keep just the crescendo and the guitar, and it keeps just, you know, the key keeps going up, it keeps going up and up, and it does it that three times, it kind of gets you going. It's almost trying to rev you up. So at this point of the album, as I said, you just come off a song, Zoshans, that's a song that's a nice song, but it's a great song, but it's a slowish kind of song. And then you go into Porch, and Porch just hits you in the gut all over again. And it's almost as if they just gave you some time to breathe before coming out with this, so you can go for one last hurrah of sorts. And I find this song just great.
I remember us in a concert in Sao Paulo, and when this song came around, I was like thrilled, and Carlos was like,
Yeah, there's a thing about me in concerts. I have some issues with large conglomerations of people. They scare me to some degree. Sometimes, not always. But at this point, I like this song, but I didn't love this song.
Well,
these days, I love this song.
I'm hopeful that we'll get together in concerts again after this whole COVID thing we're going through, right, guys? And I get to be at a Pearl Jam's concert again, and we get to, you know, sing and dance to the song.
Absolutely. I love that.
Yeah,
I love nothing better
than
that. Okay, next song up is Garden. Okay, that was Garden. It's a song that starts slow and it gets pretty intense towards the end.
About its slowness, I always feel like there's this intimate feeling to this song. Mm-hmm. I almost picture them together, like sitting on a rug, and like with candles lit and some incense, you know, going on, because there's this really, it feels really intimate at first, doesn't it?
It does. It's again, it's
a
slow,
closed
but it's
environment, like,
but it's also very intense.
At the end, right?
At the end, it's intense, and I think that
it builds into.
It does. And again, just another song that has a fade out with them singing and the song going on,
which was very, you know,
very
particular
90s.
for the time, for
yes.
the era.
Very 90s. But again, great. I think it's underappreciated in a sense because this album has such great songs, right?
Yeah.
And this song, it is great. I think the others are better, but this it is what it is. But I think this song is a fantastic song, regardless of the others being better. And again, showcasing the band as a whole, you know, from guitars to bass to drums to vocals, and also showcasing their ability to pull together a song like this that starts slow, gets fast, and loses nothing in the process.
Yeah, I think Garden is... I remember listening to Garden when I was, again, on my grandma's house, and she had like a living room where I would sit down and play my records, and I would always feel a little sad when I heard Garden because I knew that the album was getting to the end.
Well, it's funny because that you remember because you brought this up the other time with Oceans too, and this is a song that I remember again from college in my friend's dorm room listening to the song there when he played the album. And it's funny, it might be just the way the memories come together, right? Because the other songs that we have and that this album has, I probably heard them a lot more. just because they play on the radio more often, and people play them more often because they're better known. And so my memory for this song brings me back to the time when I heard it more often, which was 25 years ago. Whereas Black, I probably heard so many times this year already, even this month a bunch of times. And so it's funny that way because it seems to work that way for you too.
It does.
Yeah. So let's go now to the next song, and to me, this is one of the songs that I know the least, and this is the 10th song of the album. It's called Deep. Yeah, it's a deep, again, this song, to me, it's a good song. I think it's the other songs of the album are so great that this kind of comes in a rung below, in my opinion. I do think that it probably, musically, I don't know, it just almost seems like it should be in the next album, the Versus album that they recorded subsequently. But it's here, and so what I like about it is, I think the guitar, And the way the guitar kind of shows through the entire song, to me that's great. But otherwise, it doesn't really strike a huge chord with me.
Yeah, I like that expression, by the way. It goes perfectly with what we're doing here. I like the fact that its name is Deep. And because what I feel he's trying to convey is that these people have issues. And they try different things to touch the bottom, right? To go deep. But they are, these things that they try, like using drugs or whatever, are not, the solution for their problems. It doesn't go deep enough. Mm-hmm. There is a deeper, way to deal with your issues. And it's not by, like it says, the needle and the knife and sex probably in the end.
I guess.
So, yeah, I guess too. But that's what comes to my mind.
Of course. Again, this song just doesn't speak to me too much. The next song actually does.
Yeah.
It's a good song, a great song called Release. Okay, another one song here that goes in a crescendo. Basically, you have a song that starts real slow, and the interesting thing about this is it shows just the ability of the band at that point in time to write these kind of very, apotheotic. It's just like a huge like song.
I like the word.
I don't know if it actually exists, but either way, it just kind of grows and grows and grows, and it's just to the end it's like you're listening to like three bands play at the same time, and it shows another thing in my opinion. It's the vocal range.
Are you kidding me?
And it's no surprise that you had so many other bands that came later that had singers that try to copy the exact style. And to be honest, I don't think they were able to replicate. And that's one of the things that I think made the subsequent albums by Pearl Jam not reach the kind of level that I found this album reach.
Yeah, with Temple of the Dog, he joined.
He sang one song.
Yeah, right. What I meant to say was Chris Cornell was from.
Yeah, it's a different
Soundgarden had a very, very distinct and,
Incredible voice,
just like Eddie Vedder's. However, I think that this song is just beautiful, it's a perfect song to end an incredible album.
Yeah,
it's like a release, right? and like we said before, while we were recording this podcast, to me, this first album called 10 is pretty much an exercise of exorcism of his part, fears and his issues. And and even the way that he, uses his voice is just...
Yeah, for the lyrics and for the singing, yes, I think musically it's, again, even though this gets classified as grunge, I don't really see the grunge. And I mean, if you were comparing them to Soundgarden, but to Nirvana, to other grunge bands, it's just rock, right?
Yeah, it is rock from the 90s.
Yes,
it's the rock that we had in the 90s.
And again, now we're
from a place and time.
Yeah, you know? Now I think we're done talking about the specific song release. We can talk more generally about the album. As I said, I don't think they were able to recapture this, I think at parts, but you know, Pearl Jam is so much about the music that all the instruments make, and also the voice, because that's another instrument. And I think, I don't know, because they sang in a different key, or they just didn't happen the way that they were looking for. I don't think they ever really recaptured that well the power that
Eddie Ten had.
Yeah, the power that Eddie Vedder's voice had in 10.
I agree, but I also think that he has like freedom to express, the band has the freedom to express itself as it wants, right?
Yeah.
Just like David Bowie, that was a chameleon, and like every single album was different from the other.
Yeah, of course.
I think they have this right, and for them, just like Radiohead, which we love as well, is an exercise of their range. It's an exercise of what they can do, and they don't like being stuck with, you know, if they had been stuck, you know, at
just
grunge,
redoing 10 all the time.
Yeah, they would suck. You know,
no, it wouldn't be as good. And again,
they have to
said,
like.
They
evolve,
have,
right?
They've had great songs since, just not an album like this one again. And
we think, right?
Yeah,
this is our opinion,
yeah.
Right?
And again, for me, it's not disappointing. You can't get disappointed after you listen to 10. It's impossible.
Of course, when I'm thinking, sorry to interrupt, but when I'm thinking about all this, I can't forget elderly woman behind the counter, or daughter from Versus. There's so many great songs of this from this band.
Well, but even a song like Yellow Ledbetter, who
right.
at this point, if you look at the lyrics, you still don't know what they're talking about. But Yellow Ledbetter was written together with 10. It was one of the songs that they decided not to put
in. It was supposed to be in 10.
No, not supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be. It just was written in this time period. So,
right.
Again, it was great, and this Pearl Jam is amazing, and they're amazing in concert. And I feel that to some degree, I wouldn't call it sad. Sad is a strong word, because I don't know if it's melancholy or something, that they weren't able to replicate this in subsequent albums. I think it's a theme that will come up as we listen to more albums,
mm-hmm.
because many bands, they have that first album that's just so good, and then they kind of taper off, and they're never able to replicate. And there are some other bands that they might start off a little bit slower, maybe they start with a great album, and then they hit their stride a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And when they hit their stride, they just come out with more and more stuff that's just amazing, and you can fit a bunch of bands here. You can put in, you know, anywhere from the Beatles to Led Zeppelin to Rolling Stones to Rush and all these other bands. And so,
to your point, I think the album that Eddie Vedder made for the movie
Into the Wild
was kind of, you know, hello to this album,
yeah.
to 10. Like, it was like, hey, I'm here. I'm you know, paying homage to you know, the first.
The themes were similar for sure, right? The themes
are
very similar.
Yeah.
And
we're going to review that one too.
That's
because
important.
We love that album.
It's on the list. And the themes are similar. But again, personally for me, what this album means and is, you know, this was a time and place that, you know, the early 90s. I just come to the U.S. for college, and I was away from home for the first time. And it was a unique experience, because I remember I wasn't there for specifically that, but I was waiting at midnight outside of a record store to buy, it was a Rush album, but the same day they were also releasing Versus. 1993. So I remember it very clearly. And you know, nobody was there. There were some people that were there to buy Rush, including the people I went with. But most people were there to buy Pearl Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And the excitement, because, okay, this is a second album. And because 10 was as good as it was, it kind of puts a stamp on everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I listen to it, even though I would, you know, it, a few songs only take me back to that time, because you listen to it so often.
Right, right. To me, it was, I bought it at a Walmart in Miami, or Orlando. We had been on a trip to Disney, and we went to a Walmart. It was on my list. I wanted to buy that one. I saw it there, and that's it. And I remember it was a 10-day trip or so, and I couldn't listen to the album until I got home because I couldn't find a record player, a CD player. And I remember like unwrapping it, and oh my God, so many times I've opened this booklet to, you know, read the lyrics and like look at the pictures. Guys, we didn't have Google back then, so things were so different.
Yeah, now you can't buy CDs anymore and do that, even though you can buy vinyl and see some, you know, we have our own vinyl kind of stash here that we play sometimes. And 10 is one of the albums that we have in that stash because it is a special album. It's the album that... you know, it was considered by, I think, Rolling Stone the best debut album by a band ever.
Wow.
And it's one of the reasons that, I know, I think, you know, we chose it to be the album that we start this this podcast, right?
Yeah.
Because this is our debut podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously have some kinks that we will iron out as we go along. But we will continue to do this because...
It's fun.
It's fun. We love music.
And
this
it's
is a way
fun
to enjoy,
for us.
Yes, we enjoy music together.
It's our Fridays.
we're both horse here because...
We get to play the music.
Exactly. As I say, we're both horse here because we're singing as we're playing. And so it's lots of fun. And hopefully we can connect in some way and bring some themes. I think as we get further, other albums that might relate more to you or not, and certainly relate to us, we'll bring these themes and relate it to our lives and to, you know, lives as children of the 80s and 90s that really love music from the 60s and 70s and 2000s and any era.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, husband and wife that have been together for a long time and much longer. also parents and how all that relates together.
And thanks for listening, guys. We appreciate your comments. We appreciate your like button.
Subscribing
to our podcast if you like it. And we appreciate all sorts of comments. If you don't like something that we did, or if you have suggestions, or if you want to hate it, that's fine.
Yeah.
You can hate us.
Yeah,
I don't mind.
We're mature, and we can take it.
Yeah.
If you have any albums that you want to suggest, we have a list with... At this point, it's like 60 albums long of all different kinds of eras. And, you know, we can always add to that. And we'll keep
us
busy.
And we can't wait to go to the next one,
which
we'll be doing next week?
In a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And so the next one, we'll let you know. But it's going to be also one of the albums you'll recognize immediately, because we're going to start with some of the big hitters.
Oh, yeah. So thank you for listening one more time, and I'll see you.
Yeah, right.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.